Interview with Ratnayake, A, 11th of March,
1967.
Study your just my own experiences.
Not tell you the
forms of
independent movement.
No, I know something of that already, you see. Because, you know, DS's and Oliver's roles and the negotiations, I know some of the steps.
Yeah.
But, for instance, what was the attitude of the State Council to these negotiations, much of which they didn't really know about?
You see, you know, there was a very keen debate in the old State Council about the Dolomore. The forms. Now, E.W. Pereira, C.W.W. Karnankara, they thought that the Dolomore reforms fell far short of their demands, and that there were certain features which were unsatisfactory. One was the governor's powers. Governor was still governed and ruled, which is a cause of certification. And these two, and that the officers of state were really far more powerful than the rest of the ministers. But the public servants came completely under the Public Services Commission. Therefore, they were dissatisfied with the proposals. But by a majority of one, the Legislative Council accepted the Dolomore reforms. Now, people like C.W.W. Karnankara and D.V.I. People like Lee Serenak and D.V. Jayatilakar were strenuously to accept the reforms, saying that the State Council, the proposed State Council, will be a stepping stone to further reforms, that they could make that their sort of instrument to secure complete responsible government, responsible ministry. In fact, at that time, the idea of complete independence did not occur to anybody, yeah.
Yes, that's the point. That's why I can't understand E.W. Pereira's criticism, because from the way he criticized it, it implies that they wanted complete independence, because you got a fair amount of independence.
Yes, fair amount of it, but still even E.W. Pereira and the so-called progressives of that time were asking for dominion states. That is something like Australia and Canada or South Africa. And they were dissatisfied with this. They thought it was only less than 7/10 self-government. And with this free officer state, E.W. Pereira described them as the policemen, great throats policemen. In the State Council. So, as soon as the State Council was elected, E.W. Pereira moved a series of resolutions. You can look up and study, you'll find those resolutions. The resolutions demand that one, the abolition of the Public Service Commission. Two, the abolition of the governor's powers. Three, the abolition of the three officers of state. And the substitution of three ministers in their place, elected ministers in their place. I think E.W. Pereira also wanted the abolition of the executive committee system, because it was not the cabinet system. They wanted the cabinet system, the Westminster model. So that debate took some, it was taken up in 1932 or 33, yeah. So, some of the resolutions were accepted, some were not accepted, and then the resolutions were forwarded to the Secretary of State. But nothing happened. Nothing happened, and then of course came the war. The war came, and Ceylon became very vital link in the defenses of the empire. And they thought that Ceylon was playing a very important role in the defense of the British Empire, and that some measure of freedom should be assured to the people of Ceylon in order to secure their fullest support for the war effort. You know, India had started the cooperation movement.
Yes, that's interesting. The National Congress in India did not cooperate. We cooperated. Don't you think the National Congress gained more from it in the long run, in the sense that they became more popular than...
Yes, the Indian National Congress.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Indian National Congress became more popular because they converted that into a big people's movement. And practically the whole nation was pressed into the struggle. Non-cooperation, this thing, Satyagraha, Salt March, various events in India, we captured the imagination of the people. The people participated in a grand effort to secure complete freedom. In India also, they abandoned the idea of, they were also for many years tinkering with the idea of responsible government, dominion status. But I think it was 1929, Nehru moved in the National Congress that they should ask for what is called Purna Swaraj, that is complete independence. See, in spite of all that, Ceylon was not so very keen about complete independence. But I want to say this, because we were very young and we were also dissatisfied with the slow progress of our own leaders. I was president of the Kandyan Youth League at that time. I was not a member of the Ceylon National Congress. The Kandyan Youth League was the first organization to move a resolution of complete independence. On 2nd March, I forget the exact year, you know, we used to have annually in Kandy the, what's called this, India, called the Kandyan Convention Day. Mm-hmm. That is the day on which this experiment with the British. See, 2nd of March. So, while they were participating in the war effort, they kept on the struggle, the demand for reforms in Ceylon. They were giving every possible assistance. We practically gave all our rubber to the British, to the Americans. We practically shot at our rubber trees and exhausted its potentials. We gave all our tea, all our produce. And of course hundreds and thousands of young people went to the war.
Do you think that helped you to get independence, dominion status, and then independence quicker after the war, the fact that you had cooperated?
Yes, I think that must have, yes. That felt a great way in the sense that the Solbury commissioners were greatly impressed with the contribution that Ceylon made to the war. I think there's a reference to that also. Anyway, we thought that was the better method, namely to cooperate with the British. And we didn't follow the Indian example in that respect.
Did you consider it?
No, oh yes. There was a party principle, the Marxists and others thought that move was not correct. That reforms could not be, independence could not be gained except through bloodshed. Whereas CBS and BB both thought that constitutional agitation was the correct procedure and cooperation with the British.
I noticed that many of these negotiations were really undertaken without the knowledge of the State Council. And wasn't there a feeling in the State Council that these ministers are going behind their backs, or, you know?
Yes. That is, the ministers, of course, formulated their own proposals to reform. Mm-hmm. And they were discussed. They were discussed again in 1935. A series of resolutions were discussed. And, you know, at that time, Bandaranaike brought in a bill. Bill entitled the reform of the Constitution Bill, which also provided for dominion status. That bill was passed. But I don't know whether the ministers acted on that bill, but they acted independently. But they really implemented the series of resolutions passed by the State Council. The State Council of somewhere in 1935 passed a series of resolutions. Cabinet form of government, abolition of the committee system, So and Swami find them a good big debate on those resolutions in the text from Sidna himself. And those resolutions are passed and they consider those things, and finally they rejected the minister's proposals and sent the Donomo commissioners, the Sobir commissioners came in 1945, 46. After the war, they came in 1946. You see, since the ministers, the proposals are not accepted by the Secretary of State, the UK government, the ministers decided not to cooperate with the Sobir commissioners. In fact, none of them gave any evidence. But both Mr. D.S. Renayak and Sir Oliver and the other ministers were in constant touch with the Solbury commissioners.
Did you give evidence?
I did. They were lavishly entertained and I am not sure whether... No, they didn't. The minister did not cooperate. The Solbury commissioners went all over the island. They saw for themselves what had been done by the State Council for the development of the country. And what degree of unanimity there was in the country for reforms.
But weren't they worried by the 50-50 demand?
Yes, they were. The only opposition war came from the Tamils. That is from Mr. D.D. Ponnambar. So Solbury commissioners went to Jaffna and listened to Ponnambar more.
It is said that G.G. was encouraged by some of the Europeans in the Times.
Right.
Is that definite?
That's correct.
Why?
But they didn't want absolute majority to rule the country.
They who, the Europeans?
Even the Europeans supported them. Some of them, most of the Europeans, which is a particular number, that the minority should be given weightage. For number was the last for 50-50. See, that is equal weightage. A very different opinion. The Europeans, of course, some of them were not with Ponnambalam, others were.
Civil service too?
The civil service, I don't know whether the civil service gave any evidence, but the civil service were, as a class, I don't know whether the civil service, but the European civil service were not very anxious about further reforms. They didn't participate, at least publicly. So, then in the end, Solvay, I believe, found that Serenayaka's views prevailed throughout the country. And I think, well, that's, I know, then it's mostly must have read in that, so the inside story of the reform and so on. Actually, it is said that the Solbury Commission report was drafted by the ministers themselves. It came, they're so friendly, they're so cooperative in other respects, that the Solbury thought that the only way in which his recommendations could be pushed through was with the cooperation with the ministers. The ministers actually rejected his proposal. His proposal should be very didn't want that to happen. And therefore, I think he was a considered man. He consulted the ministers in formulating the proposals. Then so they went and reported, and this Solbury commission report was published. Then after there was a big debate.
Regarding Ponnambalam, there is a rumor that Paikman and Newnham and others also encouraged him.
Yes.
Newnham?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
The Chamber of Commerce?
Yes. Yes. They were not with us, sir. That I mean.
What was it a means of trying to keep
yes.
European balance of power?
Yes, that is what it is. See, you can look up the debates and find out how they voted. That is very important. Because I can't be definitely certain about the way that they voted. But they were certainly not with us, 100% with us. Then, you see, in 1947, the elections were held under the government.
Yes, I'm interested in those. Who was responsible for forming the United National Party?
Well, the people who were responsible for, beyond the names.
Yes, and...
The ministers, the Ceylonese ministers, B.S.N. Naik, those who were ministers at that time,
C.W.W.
Kandangra,
Korea,
Bandar Naik.
I thought he acquired his own party.
Who?
Bandar Naik.
No. I want to tell you about Bandar Naik later on. In forming the United Nations Party, but the actual persons who were responsible for the formation of the party were, that is after the reforms had been accepted, when we were preparing for the elections. So, even before that, the United UNC had been formed in order to put up a united front with regard to the reforms themselves. You see, I believe the formation of the UNC also helped in the acceleration of the responsible of dominion states. Because the only objection to you know this girl, she was at the university.
I didn't meet you.
The formation of the UNC, in order to put up the united front, she brought in the minorities, a large number of minorities. That is Jaya joined, Natesan joined, Mahadeva joined, lot of the Muslims, well, practically the vocal section of the public, except B.G. Ponnambalam, the rest all joined. Ponnambalam and the Tamil Congress didn't join. Others are Tamils, Muslims, they all joined. Rajit, they all joined. I was one of the founder members, we were not ministers. That is, myself, we were not ministers, but we were the founder members of the United National Party.
Why did you call it United National Party?
That's the idea. That is, you see, bringing all the communities together. You know, because that's the chief objection to any further reforms. I said, this Iran was not divided, and the communities couldn't come together, and in order to be complete freedom, there must be a united demand, see? And in order to create that unity, the United Nations Party was formed, and the Bandar Naik also participated. But what I want to say is that the two persons who actually formed the organization, the two persons were first Sir Francis Nolmude and Lionel Kutaraman.
You mean the party structure?
Party. Because, I forget the years, maybe 45 or 46, Nolmude, Bob Kutaraman, one of them, was the first one of them.
We didn't come to that period yet.
Okay, announced the formation of the new party. That they were forming a new party to fight the elections, to use the Marxists. That announcement was made, and thereafter there was a conference summoned. I was also present at the first meeting. All these people were there.
Well, R.S.S. Gunawala?
R.S. Gunawala, I think, was there. I'm not sure if he was in the state council. You can check up, find out where the R.S.S. is. Maybe R.S.S. Gunawala was in the state council. Anyway, the founder members happened to be most of the members of the state council and other leaders. Although we were not ministers, but we were just two very close to the ministers, with Adli, myself, they are, some of us who became ministers afterwards. So we formed the UNP and then the constitution. Then we fought the elections on the UNP ticket, elections.
Isn't it correct to say that at that stage that the UNP didn't have a really good organization and even didn't have a clear economic program?
Yes, maybe. No economics. I can't remember any form, any concept development, general idea of development. There was no, you know, clear-cut manifesto in a party and policy program. I want to tell you this, that when the Solbury Commission report was placed before the State Council for its acceptance, Bandaranaik was opposed to it. He opposed it.
Why?
He thought that the Prime Minister would be virtual dictator under the cabinet system of Bandaranaik. Remember, earlier he was strongly in favor of the executive system being continued. And personally, I had long discussions with him. Now, he was toying with the idea of having a separate group at this time.
Separate party.
That is why he was still, I think, was elected vice president of UNP. But that's why he was still vice president of UNP and openly working with the UNP. He didn't like, well, I mean, personal reasons also. He didn't want, he is still trying the idea of continuing with the single Mahasabha as a political party. Of course, in the State Council at that time, majority of the members of the UNP were single Mahasabha. So I was a member of the single Mahasabha. Good many of them were members of the single Mahasabha. If you count it, the members of the State Council, the single Mahasabha had more members than the National Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That time there
was National Congress. That was a bit decrepit now.
Which was dying, if not dead. Say, Amar Surya had been three times president, where Amar Surya is president for three times. It was dying or dead, I forget now. Rajawaji Sila was another man. He was prominent leader.
In the National Congress.
Then, anyhow, all of us supported, asked President Banda to support the Solbury proposal. And the elections were held, and I don't think DS was worried about even the majority. We hadn't a clear-cut majority.
But wasn't he disappointed in the results?
He must have been disappointed because he had a large number. I forget exactly, if I look up, I can tell you exactly who the members of the UNP were. See, Banda kept us, probably they could not have formed the cabinet. But at that time, you man didn't think of majority and so on. We asked Lyon, I said, and how many are there? How many UNP members? Then formed the minority, just get two or three other chaps in and.
Well, there were a lot of independents who were willing to join, right?
Also, the Muslim members from Eastern Province, they were going to join. They were not quite in part. They were came in. So, their majority was found, secured.
Did they buy Banda's support?
No.
I mean, there's a theory that he was promised succession?
It's a verbal. These are rumors, I am not sure whether he has promised any such thing. But he wanted to be Deputy Prime Minister that time. He wanted Deputy Prime Minister. There was no provision for Deputy Prime Minister in the Constitution. Ultimately, there was a lot of wrangling this, that and the other, and we assured him the leadership of the House. He was named CM. I agreed to make him that. I don't think there's no provision in the Constitution for a leader.
I was just worried that at one stage, some leaders recommended that DA should be the government general, which would imply that Banda would become the Prime Minister.
No, I am not aware of it. Banda may have thought about it. Banda himself may have thought about it. Banda, in fact, thought that it was high time that DA gave up the leadership. He was closer to Banda than to DA. When I say that, when I say close, I was a member of the single Mahasabha.
Mm-hmm.
I was the senior vice president. Then of Banda Guru Sibra, I actually was vice president. And therefore, all they counted me as one of the single Mahasabha leaders. But of course, single Mahasabha itself was dying or dead, you see. It was not functioning activities.
I noticed that our SS became chief garment whip and minister of portfolio for a while, for a short while. But earlier on he had been rather the anti-DS group and more closer to Barney, wasn't
he? Yes, yes. Huh? He was closer to Barney. In fact, Banda was mainly responsible for making RSS a minister, without portfolio. He was not included in the Indian cabinet. Banda himself was, he fought very hard. That's one of the minor triumphs of Banda on that occasion. But actually, when it came to where, when the bill, you see, we are now implementing the Donavar Constitution. We were still dissatisfied with the Donavar Constitution in that it gave us only dominion status, not complete independence. See, that is the right to secede from there, and the Commonwealth was not there. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
See, and certain other provisions.
But you got that very soon.
Yes, well, the first thing that the cabinet did when we met, I was a member of the cabinet, was to prepare a bill called, the draft bill was called Dominion Status Bill. See, the bill creating Dominion Status was your honor. Well, I don't know. Now, I was a chap, I stood for independence right through. I believe in 1935 I presided this, I told you, the community meeting, where I moved a resolution that Ceylon should be completely independent. And I brought up in the cabinet that instead of calling it the Dominion Status Bill, we should call it the Independence Bill. See? And I must say that without any dissension, there was nothing, an argument about it, we all agreed. The word Dominion Status removed, and we call it the Independence Bill. And it is like who moved it, but nobody talks about it. Then of course, that bill was sent up, and DS himself went to the UK, and there was something, you know, change of governments there and so forth, and ultimately they agreed to the Independence Bill, giving on the Westminster model, giving us the right to secede, and all those rights which the other dominions enjoyed.
In 46, when DS flew to London and made the same claim, they refused it, but this time they gave it. Why?
The change of government, I think, change of government, and they thought, well, probably the idea of resisting this bill, see, practically everything had been given, and I believe you'll find the correspondence reasons. The correspondence and speeches made by DS from time to time, the reasons for it. But he had made a statement, made a speech somewhere about that. By how he succeeded in getting complete independence. See? But there was no, from my own recollection, he had no formidable obstacle at that time. See? I just situated when 90% of our demands, the British wanted to withdraw in good, see?
Good faith.
Good faith, see? And they did very gracefully.
I was wondering whether, because there were a series of strikes at this time, you know, Kandu's army strikes, whether DS and Oliver told the British, let us deal with it, why do you want to meet this trouble, you see, why don't you give us
any... Kandu's army strike was 46, wasn't it?
46 or 47, mainly 47.
Or early 47, maybe early 47, because it was during the State Council days.
Yes.
Not independence.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did with this. I don't think the British were called upon to deal with that. The SNF activity did a lot of propaganda. She gave a strike.
Regarding UNP rule from 47, shall I say, to 56, there is this 5-year or 6-year plan you had, but wasn't it really a full of shortcomings?
Yes, that is 6-year plan. That is in 48.
Yes, 48.
48, 6-year plan in 48. Well, you see, that brand really was a collection of the individual divans of various ministries put together. So that there was no coordinated body deciding upon the priorities and with a clear-cut policy and program.
Would you say that at that time, both with regard to the UNP and the cabinet minister, the concept of planning was rather limited, and perhaps the knowledge of economics was...
Yes. Maybe, of course, most of us are not graduates in economics. You see, this idea of planning occurred, started with ASEAN. ASEAN had a series of five-year plans, and they made rapid progress. Then, of course, the word planning became popular, and the Navy was constantly talking about planning, and we set up a planning commission in the Navy.
Who is it?
Navy. That is even long before independence. That is, we appointed a planning commission. And various committees, subcommittees were appointed, and these subcommittees reported on a plan for the development of India. See, that was also a practical thing. Even the modern ministers had a plan. Modern ministers in 1936 or 37, they also had a plan. I think it was Pondicherry. That was also a collection of the ministerial, see, various ministries there. See, there you ask the department, what do you want? I want schools, so many schools, I want so many hospitals, I want so many this thing, that thing, and so forth. Collection of those things became the plan. There must have been a discussion in the cabinet, you know. But no, there was no, now for instance, certain targets, say rate of growth, what will be the total national output next year, and what is the, how is the money to be found, how is it to be spent, how is it to be spaced out, programmed, all those things were. Now the 10-year plan was a better concept.
Which one?
Bandaranaike's 10-year plan. That was
what was your ministry?
My first ministry was food, not food and cooperatives.
Mm-hmm. And after?
After that, whole
So as food and cooperatives, what did you consider your chief aims and
priorities? See, actually food production was not my job. My job was food distribution. See, procuring food and distributing. At that time, you see, food was a difficult, you see, the world shortage of rice as it is now, you see, of course. And distribution and the cooperatives.
Is it correct to say that from the war years, there had been a non-publicized subsidy on rice, a small subsidy, even before the big step you all took?
Well, no. There was no subsidy on rice before that. Actually, the subsidy started with me. See? Here. That's very important. Why I? No, 55.
51?
No, must have been 40. 49 or 48, 40, that's the trick. 48, 49. That is, of course, we are selling rice. At the cost price.
Yes.
When I became minister, the price must have been 45 cents. I'm not sure about that.
Then?
Figures. Then you see at that time, we had this cost of living index.
Yes.
These public servants and all wage earners were getting an allowance, cost of living allowance and a special allowance. And that allowance was determined each month according to the cost of living index. See? So if the cost of living index rose, the allowance increased. The allowance was calculated according to the cost of living index. See? If the cost of living index goes down, the allowance goes down. See? I'm not sure about the figures, But I remember that any increase in the cost of rice by 1 cent amounted to the cost of the war allowance, the special allowance, also going up by ₹1 million. See? So I calculated and they brought down the price of rice to 25 cents.
See? Well, you felt that you would be saving on this?
The saving was enormous. The saving, because at that time the losses...
You mean you gave enough, you saved on allowances?
Yes, yes. See? Mm. It was a tremendous profit. I was complimented by everybody for to making a profit on this.
By subsidizing rice?
Subsidizing rice. See, that is the actual amount of the subsidy came to less than $1 million, I think. Or, see, I'm not sure about the figures. But Japo could give you all the figures and work it out, it's all up in there,
yeah.
See. So when the cost of rice was brought down from something like 35 to 25, the cost of living allowance went down by so many millions. Actually, the government made a profit out of it.
I've been told that the original proposal was that, you see, just at that time, for some special reason, the price of coconuts had gone up, and therefore, again, the cost of living was going up. So they suggested rationing, subsidizing coconuts. But there were practical difficulties there, and they found it easier to subsidize rice.
There may have been proposals like that. Actually, at that time, we had a surplus. Huh? The revenue, the treasury also had a surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And the alternative, we had one or two alternatives. That is, there was a demand for increase the salaries of our servants. See? Now, majority of the cabinet thought that it would be better to distribute the surpluses. See? So that the whole nation will benefit. And we thought the best way to benefit the whole nation would be to bring down the price of rice.
But didn't you realize that in time this would increase?
No.
You know, the subsidy?
No. Of course, we were personally, I was prepared. No, what any government should have done was, when it became an impossible burden, they should have. See? But during my time it was not.
Now, in your time it was balanced by saving in allowances.
Yes.
Why didn't that continue, that balance?
Then you see, I think the cost of living, the allowances are tagged, isn't it?
But
they were not tied to the cost of living index. See? Allowance was fixed.
Fixed. Oh, I see. Okay.
And had no relation to the cost of living index.
When was that?
Exactly, 6 months
time. Also in
UNP times? And thereafter, the subsidy became bigger and bigger because production, the consumption also went up. And the price of rice also went up. See? Population was increasing. See? Then of course the guaranteed purchase price, we are buying paddy at 12 rupees. I think there are big records involved in that business. So that's how the subsidy became a very big burden. But although it was a burden, and the World Bank and all these people complain about it, I personally will always justify it. Because it can, probably it had to be dropped someday or other, but that was one of the biggest social services in the sense that in Vietnam and other places they are fighting communism. They are spending tons and tons of money on it, see? But here the people are, and they are guaranteeing their assured supply of food in this country, see?
Taking UNP rule as a sort of poll, don't you think there was that you began to lose contact with the masses and there's too much
supporters? When you say any government, any board of set of ministers, see, will always lose contact with the masses in the sense. It's very difficult, you know, for a minister to meet every one of the persons wanting to meet them. See, same thing happened to Nibandar Naika was Nibandar Naika available to anybody, accessible to anybody. She lived in a highly fortified fortress. Why do you say that? Now the criticism is made against these ministers. Even in 56, now, personally I can't say that I have lost contacts. I meet people, I talk to them very nicely. My home is like an umbrella, anybody could come and they walk straight into the face. I entertain them nicely. I'm always available to them. But as a minister, I have to be in Colombo most of the time, you see. I have to be in Colombo most of the time, attend to them. And then, of course, as minister, I have to attend meetings. The cooperative movement was a great movement at that time. See, people's movement. See, and meetings, I must have attended on 1 week about 52 meetings, Daphna, for instance. So naturally, you see, your constituents don't get the same amount of time that they used to get as well, you know, they not even remember. See, it's humanly impossible, you see.
No, but there was sort of feeling that there was too much jitterbugging and, you know, flashy supporters and things like that.
What do you mean?
Sort of bonanza for supporters, certain groups getting, you know, help and
no,
whereabouts.
I don't think that is quite correct. You may have seen, naturally, a minister is always a human being. He tries to accommodate people whom he knows, see, who are, now for instance, the people whom we, I'm not taking my own case, I had the rural development societies, and they had elected the presidents and the secretaries, and I knew all of them. And they come to me for various requests with regard to the village. See? Now, it so happened that they became unpopular in the village, the elected leaders. See? They were having contacts with me. See, they moved very freely with me. See? And they were the people described as contact men. And the masses, see, didn't like that. You see, they wanted me personally there in every home. See?
Which is impossible.
I have to depend upon someone. Now in England, ministers don't meet everybody, you see. But in Ceylon, the pressure is too great. Everybody wants to meet the Prime Minister. Failing the Prince,
regarding Banda's crossover, what have you say to that? How would you explain it?
That's a long story, yeah. It, I think I relate the whole story in the Axiom Hansard. If you look up the budget, when did Banda cross over? 51, no? 51. 52 budget and my speech, I will read the whole story.
Oh, is it there? I haven't read it. I read J.L.C. Fernando's account, then he relates the story about the State Council days when D.S. went to England and they had to choose a vice chairman of the Board of Ministers in D.S.'s place. He gives a story about D.C.S. Correa, Banda and Sir John coming forward, and they had a choice by lots in Mahadeva's house. Did you know of that?
Yes, there was something like that, yes. Something like that. But ultimately, Banda acted, didn't he? Huh?
Yes, he drew the lot, you see.
Yes, I get it. There are a lot of rivalries like that. Now, Banda was also a very sensitive chap. Huh? Very sensitive. For instance, he thought that he was the legitimate successor to D.S. Senanayake. He was graduate from Oxford, brilliant speaker, his knowledge, his oratory, all these things entitled him to succeed in Senanayake and even take his place, see, remove Senanayake. He was constantly thinking of becoming the Prime Minister. So naturally, you see, every move which thwarted that ambition of his was, see, misinterpreted by him. If, for instance, if Lionel walks ahead of him, he says, this man walks ahead of me. And
then his personal rival.
Rival.
Is it true that in 48, when they were forming the first cabinet, he was offered the post of Minister of Finance?
No, I don't know that.
But he wanted local administration? And it would appear that he used this ministerial power to build up his popularity.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Did you experience
no, that? No, yes. That is, he wanted to be in touch with the people and organize. There is no doubt about that.
Now, for instance, in your area, Dumber, did he use the local administration to boost his own popularity?
Yes. not only my area, he continued to be the president of the Veda Committee's association, while he was minister. See? Oh yes, he was constantly building up a movement to take DSS place. And of course he justified it, you see.
Isn't it correct to say that he had no sort of caste feeling at all?
That's the personal question. No? Mm. See,
no, because he is, And what about the premier stakes?
Premier stakes, what do you want to know about it?
No, I mean, I know only the sort of general gist of it, but for instance, is it correct to say that that theory that DS had told Sir John, DS had told